This is Ann Weller with the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And for the next 30 minutes, I will be sharing nutrition information with you. This information is selected from the Nutrition Action Health Letter, a publication of the Center for Science in the Public Interest, based in Washington, D.C. The Center for Science in the Public Interest was founded in 1971 by three scientists who wanted to apply their academic training to the solving of social problems. The center conducts innovative research and programs in health and nutrition, and it provides consumers with current information about their health and well-being. An independent, nonprofit consumer health group, the center promotes honest food labeling and advertising, safer and more nutritious foods, and pro-health alcohol policies. The work of the Center for Science in the Public Interest is supported by Nutrition Action Health Letter subscribers and by foundation grants. It accepts no government or industry funding, and Nutrition Action Health Letter, which was first published in 1974, accepts no advertising. The following edition of Nutrition News is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Please use the information presented in this broadcast in consultation with your personal physician. In the cover story of the March 2011 issue of Nutrition Action Health Letter, Director of Nutrition Bonnie Liebman discusses the increased consumption of refined grains by a considerable portion of the United States population. Refined grains are grains or grain flours that have been significantly modified from their natural or whole grain composition. The modification process generally involves the mechanical removal of bran and germ, either through grinding or selective sifting. Further refining includes mixing, bleaching, and brominating. Additionally, thiamine, riboflavin, niacin, and iron are often added back in to nutritionally enrich the product. But because the added nutrients represent only a fraction of the nutrients removed, refined grains are considered nutritionally inferior to whole grains. An adult who eats 2,000 calories a day should swallow no more refined grain than you would consume in three small slices of bread, says the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And there's good evidence that less refined grain is even better. Yet you would get at least double that day's worth in a single restaurant serving of pasta, pancakes, pizza, or virtually any dish served with rice or noodles at a Chinese restaurant. We are eating about 45% more calories from grains, most of them refined, than we did in 1970. So what? In 1970, the average American consumed about 430 calories a day from grains. That is wheat, rice, corn, oats, etc., according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. But by 2008, we were up to 625 calories a day of refined grains, a huge bump. And roughly 90% of the grain that we eat is refined, not whole. Only one other category, fats and oils, which includes butter, oils, margarine, and shortening, supplies that many calories. So much for the popular notion that we've been on a low-fat diet. Added sugars also climbed during that time period, though less so. They are up about 60 calories a day since 1970. How does so much refined grain creep into our diets? Well, restaurants pile on the pasta, rice, pancakes, breads, and other cheap carbs. If you go to a Mexican restaurant and get a burrito, If you go to a Chinese restaurant and get rice, if you get a huge plate of pasta and huge pieces of bread, you are eating well over the amount that's recommended all day, says Penny Chris Etherton, distinguished professor of nutrition at Pennsylvania State University. Many restaurants combine multiple carbs into one meal. That burrito stuffs rice into a tortilla. And that's after you dive into the free basket of tortilla chips or polish off a cheese quesadilla appetizer. Like many Italian restaurants, Olive Garden offers unlimited bread with your pasta. That often follows an appetizer, like bruschetta on white bread, or artichoke spinach dip with white bread, or fondue with white bread. And no one is offering whole grain chocolate cake or tiramisu for dessert. And it's not just restaurant food. We're eating bigger bagels, muffins, donuts, scones, ice cream cones, pretzels, cookies, wraps, and slices of bread, most of which are made with white flour. People see bread labels that say 15 different grains, says Dr. Chris Etherton, and they think, wow, this is super. They don't notice that each slice has 100 to 120 calories, and a bagel can easily have 300 calories. But if you look at a thin slice of bread, which has 70 calories, that's what we used to eat before, notes Dr. Chris Etherton. Now 70-calorie slices are called small. Why are we eating oversized breads, bagels, burritos, and rice balls? In part, it's because flour and rice are cheap, and restaurants look generous when they pile them on our plates, and we eat what's there. And after a while, the servings do not look oversized anymore. And our alarms don't seem to be off or to go off as they might for sweets or fried foods. The danger is that some people are assuming that they cannot get fat from carbohydrates like bagels, pretzels, and spaghetti, says Alice Lichtenstein, director of the Cardiovascular Nutrition Laboratory at the Jean Mayer U.S. Department of Agriculture Human Nutrition Research Center on Aging at Tufts University in Boston. Perhaps we are more focused on avoiding saturated fats and added sugars. And both steps are crucial. Saturated and trans fat raises the risk of heart disease. And added sugars are empty calories that may promote obesity, heart disease, diabetes, and gout. Roughly 35% of our calories are coming from solid fats and added sugars, says Dr. Chris Etherton. We are eating way too many added sugars, but we also have to be mindful of the amount of refined grains that we are eating, and this is why. Too many carbohydrates can raise triglycerides and lower HDL or good cholesterol. And for some people, too many carbohydrates of any kind may threaten the heart. Toward the end of the 1990s, we realized that some people are very high carb diets, were developing dyslipidemia, says Dr. Lichtenstein. Those carbohydrates were mostly coming from added sugars and refined grain. This dyslipidemia was a mix of high triglycerides and low HDL, and both are associated with an increased risk of cardiovascular disease, notes Dr. Lichtenstein. They move in lockstep. Genes make some people more susceptible to having high triglycerides and low HDL cholesterol. But the obesity epidemic has made the problem worse. You are more likely to develop dyslipidemia if you are overweight, says Dr. Lichtenstein. and we certainly are not getting slimmer. High triglycerides, low HDL cholesterol, and a large waist, which is defined as over 40 inches in men or 35 inches in women, are three of the five signs of what is called the metabolic syndrome. The other two signs are elevated blood pressure, at least 130 over 85, and elevated blood sugar, at least 100 milligrams per deciliter. Approximately 47 million Americans have the metabolic syndrome, says Dr. Chris Etherton, and that's one out of every four adults. The metabolic syndrome may soon surpass cigarette smoking as the number one risk factor for cardiovascular disease, she notes. And people with the metabolic syndrome also have a higher risk of diabetes. Extra carbohydrates may matter even if you don't have the metabolic syndrome. People who have either high or average triglyceride levels experience an effect of carbohydrates, says Frank Sachs, professor of cardiovascular disease prevention at the Harvard School of Public Health in Boston. When we tested overweight or obese people, carbohydrates raised their triglycerides unless their triglycerides were really low, and that's at levels under 100 milligram per deciliter. Do some carbohydrates raise triglycerides more than others? Well, sugars appear to raise them the most, and beyond that, it is not clear whether refined grains raise triglycerides more than whole grains. Is the amount or the type of carbohydrate the most important thing? Asks Dr. Sachs. And he responds, that is a critical question. Do whole grains and refined grains have equal effects? Dr. Sachs also asks. And that's what our current research is trying to find out. Limiting the consumption of refined grains can also help to lower blood pressure. And if you don't have high blood pressure right now, odds are that you will. More than half of the people over 60 have hypertension, and it is one of the key causes of strokes and heart attacks. And cutting back on salt is not the only way to keep a lid on blood pressure. In 1997, the Dietary Approaches to Stop Hypertension, or the DASH study, essentially replaced much of the saturated fat and added sugar in a typical American diet with fruits, vegetables, and low-fat dairy foods. With 10 servings a day of fruits and vegetables, a typical 2,000-calorie DASH diet had room for only 7 small servings of grain. And the results were stunning. Systolic blood pressure, that is the higher number, fell by 5.5 points overall after 8 weeks on the DASH diet. And among those with high blood pressure, it's plummeted by 11.4 points. The DASH diet was a real breakthrough for lowering blood pressure, says Dr. Sachs. And what's more, the DASH diet slashed LDL, or bad cholesterol, by more than 10 points. And triglycerides did not go up, even though it was higher in carbohydrates than the typical American control diet, he adds. In the follow-up OmniHeart trial, Dr. Sachs and his colleagues tweaked the DASH diet to replace some of its carbohydrates, mostly the added sugars, with either extra unsaturated fat, mostly from oils, or extra protein, more than half of it from beans, nuts, seeds, and tofu. Each OmniHeart diet had room for only 4 or 5 small servings of grain a day. The unsaturated fat and protein diets were superior, notes Dr. Sachs. But that's fine-tuning, he adds. If people could just switch to a regular DASH diet, That would make a huge difference. Do refined grains raise blood pressure more than whole grains? Well, DASH and the OmniHeart studies both included whole grains, but were not designed to answer the question. So far, only one study, which needs to be replicated, has tried to. When Scottish researchers gave people 3 servings a day of whole grain breads and cereals for 3 months, the participants had markedly lower blood pressure than those who got 3 servings a day of refined grains. The drop, 5 to 6 points in systolic pressure, is what you would expect to see with drugs used to treat hypertension, says the authors, and could result in decreases of the incidence of coronary heart disease, artery disease, and stroke by 15% and 25%, respectively. Whole grains are healthier than refined grains, so there's no shortage of reasons to eat whole grains instead of refined grains. First, regarding obesity, diabetes, and heart disease. In study after study, people who eat more whole grains have a lower risk of obesity, heart disease, and diabetes than those who eat fewer whole grains. But whole grain eaters are also less likely to smoke, and they're more likely to exercise and eat a healthier diet. Researchers adjust for those and other known differences. But it's possible that something the researchers do not know about whole grain eaters lowers their risks. Most of the data suggests that unrefined grains are better than refined, says Dr. Lichtenstein. But if you look at those data, they are mostly association studies that cannot prove cause and effect, so it is not clear. On the other hand, by eating whole grains, you cannot lose. It is important to stress whole grains because they have benefits beyond those associated with blood lipids and blood pressure, adds Dr. Lichtenstein. For example, their fiber creates a feeling of fullness that can help curb your appetite. And the bran in whole grains is an excellent source of fiber that can help keep you regular, says Dr. Lichtenstein. And most people do not get enough of it. Refined grains are also lower in vitamins like B6 and E, and minerals like copper, magnesium, potassium, selenium, and zinc than whole grains. The potassium may lower blood pressure, and the magnesium may protect against diabetes. So why miss out on those and other nutrients that are stripped away in refined grains? The healthiest diets do not have much room for refined grains. For example, if you're shooting for 2,000 calories a day, there is not much room for a 400-calorie chocolate chip cookie from Panera Bread, a 500-calorie muffin from Dunkin' Donuts, a 1,000-calorie plate of tomato basil spaghettini from California Pizza Kitchen, or a 1,500-calorie serving of chow fun with beef from P.F. Chang's. Pasta packs 200 calories a cup without sauce, and restaurants typically serve at least 3 cups. Many people still think it is okay to eat a huge plate of pasta, says Dr. Chris Etherton, and that is not the right message anymore. So, the bottom line, most Americans need to be concerned about excess carbohydrates because they are overweight, notes Dr. Lichtenstein, and it's wise to spend your carbohydrates on healthy foods. The message is not that all carbohydrates are bad, so get them down as much as you can, explains Dr. Sachs. The central message is to get your carbohydrates from vegetables, fruit, and whole grains, rather than from sugar, fruit juice, and refined grains. The results of a study recently published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition suggest a practical way to increase the nutritional value and to decrease the calorie content of certain meals. If you secretly swap pureed vegetables for other ingredients in some dishes, people will eat fewer calories and will not notice the difference. Researchers at Pennsylvania State University offered 41 young men and women breakfast, lunch, and dinner once a week for 3 weeks. At each meal, one dish, the carrot bread for breakfast, the macaroni and cheese for lunch, or the chicken and rice casserole for dinner, contained pureed vegetables in place of other ingredients. And when enough pureed vegetables were added to triple the amount of veggies in a dish, the calories dropped by 15%. And when enough were added to increase the vegetables by 4.5 times, the calories dropped by 25%. So the results were that people consumed the same weight of food regardless of the amount of pureed vegetables the dish contained. So on days when the vegetables were tripled, the participants ate 200 fewer calories. And on days when the vegetables were multiplied by 4.5, they ate 360 fewer calories. But hunger and fullness ratings remained the same. So if you cook for vegetable-averse family members, start pureeing. And if you cook for vegetable lovers, bump up the salad, broccoli, asparagus, or other veggies, and cut back on rice, pasta, bread, or other sides. If you ordinarily serve one vegetable with dinner, try two. But beware of labels that promote products because they contain multiple servings of fruits or vegetables. A full serving of vegetables in every bowl promises Chef Boyardee, whose ads show parents desperately trying to keep their kids from finding out. Each serving of the salt-laden white flour pasta has a serving of vegetables because it contains a half cup of tomatoes. Well, that's tomato puree plus water, actually. Big deal. Yet labels or ads touting the number of servings of fruit or vegetables must be impressing some consumers because the claims are proliferating. Take Bolthouse Farms beverages, which are often found in the produce aisle. The label says 3.75 servings of fruit per bottle, says the label of the 15-ounce Blue Goodness fruit smoothie. Here's a goof alert. The label's nutrition facts apply to just half the bottle. So don't think that you're spending 170 calories to get those 3.25 servings. You're actually spending 340 calories. Here's the catch. The label pictures the goodness in each bottle. 31 blueberries, 1.25 blackberries, 1 banana, 3.25 apples, and 1/4 of a lemon. Impressive? Well, not once you realize that the beverage is mostly apple juice from concentrate, banana puree, and blueberry juice from concentrate. The goodness of 3.75 apples, for example, is what you'd get in the same amount of any apple juice concentrate. So, Looking for fruits and vegetables? Buy them whole, fresh or frozen, not as ingredients in juices, tomato sauce, chips, crackers, or other processed foods. The results of another study, recently published in the journal Pediatrics, suggests another practical way to increase the nutritional value and decrease the calorie content of certain meals. You want your kids or other family members to eat more fruit for breakfast? Well, make sure their cereal is low in sugar. Researchers randomly assigned 91 children aged 5 to 12 to choose one of three low-sugar cereals, that is, Cheerios, Corn Flakes, or Rice Krispies, or one of three high-sugar cereals, Cocoa Puffs, Fruit Loops, or Frosted Flakes. And the kids also had unlimited access to low-fat milk, orange juice, bananas, strawberries, and packets of sugar. Roughly half, 54% of the children who got a low-sugar cereal, but only 8% of those who got a high-sugar cereal, put fresh fruit on top. And those who ate a high-sugar cereal ended up downing twice as much added sugar per breakfast than those who ate a low-sugar cereal. Even when researchers added in the sugar that the kids got from any sugar packets that they used, children who ate a high-sugar cereal also ended up eating more cereal, about two servings, versus slightly more than one serving for children who ate a low-sugar cereal. So for healthier breakfasts, stick with low-sugar cereals. Well, folks, we've reached the conclusion of this month's segment of Nutrition News. The show will be rebroadcast this week on Friday at 11 p.m. and on Saturday at 3 p.m. I hope you'll join me for the next edition of Nutrition News, which will air on Wednesday, May 4th at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm Ann Weller, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And I hope that you've enjoyed the show. The program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience, and it is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long until next month.